Coffee?
I think that would be a great idea.
Make it a double. I've been up early.
Shot in the dark.
Two for me.
Welcome to this edition of the Shot in the Dark podcast. Training, coaching, renting, culture, science, the lot. Today we're talking about, it's quite an old topic now in fitness actually, it was, I sort of remember it was new. I remember one of my first ever fitness tours, doing seminars and teaching in, I think it was 2001, was on core stability, which is obviously the topic for this podcast, where it's come from and where it's going to and what it's used for and stuff. Gemma, give us a little bit of an overview. What's core stability in the general terms?
Going through a training program or a set of exercises that is specifically aimed at trying to stabilize the muscles that, or try and recruit the muscles that stabilize us when we're in function, in movement.
But in a particular area or just in general?
No, in your core, in your glutes, in your stomach muscles, in your pelvic floor, that sort of thing.
And it's, I don't know
if you remember when it was sort of first came out, and we did a lot with, we had quite a lot of equipment, didn't we? We used Swiss balls or big round fitness balls, and I don't know if they're still people still using
the Billy balls are still in gyms, mate.
Yep. Are they really?
They are.
Okay, it's interesting.
I had my little magic trick of being able to jump on one and stand on it.
I can stand on a Swiss ball as well and squat. Okay. I thought I was really cool.
I stacked it once in the gym.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was you on your own or did someone see you?
Oh, a lot of people saw me. I probably look like a right idiot. And they're probably all like,
Serves you right. Serves
you right, yeah.
Because then they progressed that, didn't they? And they sort of said, well, we didn't need a whole ball. We could just make a half one.
A Bosu ball.
Yeah.
Is that what they're called, is it? Okay. Yeah. And we put that on the floor.
Was that the progression, was it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can remember going out to my seminars with a big bouncy ball and a broomstick.
What's the broomstick for?
Neutral spine.
Yeah, to put it on someone's back.
No, I'm much younger than you guys, so we didn't do that.
Yeah, we had to put I'd always teach people to put a broomstick on someone's back and hold their back completely straight while they were doing everything.
What?
Don't move.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting for you to explain to me how that is helpful.
Yeah, well, as you sort of alluded to, core stability was the sort of stabilization of the core,
yes.
The middle area, and I think we sort of made some pretty big mistakes by only using the word stability, and we sort of forgot about everything else involved in movement and mechanics and jumping and function and stuff, and we just sort of said, well, it's core and the core needs stability, so we're not going to move, we're not going to do anything at all, we're just going to lay down or try and fix ourselves as still as we possibly can with absolutely no motion at all and hold our back as straight as we can in some very funky positions,
and that will be helpful because
no movement and neutral is safe.
According to
John.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, but it is safe until you move.
Yeah, when you're still.
Oh, it is the safest place in the world. Yeah, neutral is,
I mean,
safe.
No one gets hurt in neutral spine until they move.
On neutral knee. Knee's not allowed to go outside or inside.
Yeah, or move.
Or over.
That's
or
it.
Move.
Just
exactly.
As still as we can be.
So yeah, if we all stay perfectly still, we're cool. We're safe.
Yeah, you're not. If you don't move, you're fine.
At no risk.
And that was the premise of we see the naivety of my seminars then was, if I teach somebody not to move, they won't get injured. And I wasn't wrong, I don't think.
No.
Because, well, but the problem was what kept happening is they started moving. And as they started to move, well then they started to get injured and they started to get hurt, because what I'd actually found, or what we found we'd done, is we'd created what we call an artificial stability. So we'd created muscles that were very strong, very stable while we were sort of laying still or balancing or holding one position. And we'd only ever trained this. And what was interesting, again, it's just not looking, it's not seeing the bigger picture. We didn't look at the bigger picture. We didn't understand the bigger picture then. We sort of thought, we just need to, more is better. So the more weight I've got on, the old concept of the more weight I've got on it, the harder it is. So, and the harder it is, the more we overload the system. When we overload the system, the more neurological reaction we'll get, the more of a reaction we'll get, the better this person will be. So it was like, well, how do we overload not moving as much as possible? So how do we just put them in a position and make that just as hard as we possibly can, because that must be good.
Yeah.
Because overloading that position would stimulate a neurological adaptation, a supercompensation, which would then make them stronger while they weren't moving.
Okay. So what about the ones, the exercises that people do where they keep their perfectly neutral spine, but then they move a leg or an arm, or they try and do something at the same time as holding their core still? How do we feel about that?
It's not possible. I mean, I know we're going to get, I mean, I know this is, I don't think, I don't, I mean, I don't think in 2016 anyone disagrees with that anymore. I mean, maybe 5 or 6 years ago there would be a sort of, this would be a rage and a rant for me to say what I'm about to say, but you don't take a step in neutral spine. It isn't possible to take a step forward and keep a neutral spine. So the fact that, I mean, without trying to bore our listeners, but you take a step forward, your pelvis rotates, it twists to one side and it rotates forwards and it does different things. And such is the rigidity of the joints between when my leg moves and the hips, that everything sort of moves around a lot, so it can't stay still.
Completely agree. And then on the other front as well, is the body's trained to understand what it's trained to understand.
Yeah, exactly.
So if it only understands staying still, then it gets hurt when it moves dynamically, because it has no knowledge of any other position other than stillness.
Because it tries to take it back to default, and the default is what you train. I mean, I've had to learn, in my adult life, moving countries, I've had to learn new language. I've had to learn to speak Danish. And someone speaking Spanish to me doesn't help me learn Danish. And that's ultimately what we were doing there. We were sort of trying to teach them Danish whilst we were speaking Spanish to them, and we didn't really understand why they weren't getting better at Danish and why they were getting worse. And that's the thing, isn't it? We were teaching a spine not to move, and then putting them into sport and asking it to move, and a spine saying, but you don't want me to move. And at that point, everyone was saying, well, that's right, we don't want you to move because you're safest here. And so you've got the body that will move, because the brain will move you, because you need to kick that ball or throw that ball or tackle that person or do whatever it is you need to do in your sport. So you're going to move, you're going to take the spine and the back and the hips and everything else into end range. And we've created adaptively shortened muscles around the spine, adaptively shortened abdominals, adaptively shortened everything else. We've taught it to consciously try to control motion, and then gone into a sport and subconsciously tried to activate things and do things and move, and wondered why we actually ended up creating more injuries than we started with. And ultimately, that's where we came to with core stability, was by locking down our core and not moving, we actually ended up creating more injuries than we were preventing.
Yeah, exactly.
Is the problem our understanding of what the word recruitment is? Because obviously, what we're talking about is core stability from 2001 is the shortening of a muscle. Like, what do we consider?
Well, that's it. I mean, we thought stability must be shorter, because the shorter it is, the more it holds on, if you like, to the joint above and the joint below, or the bone above, bone below, crossing the joint. And the harder they hold on to each other, the stiffer everything is, and the stiffer everything is, well, the more stable everything is. And we couldn't have been further from the truth. I mean, we really, really got it wrong. So I think that that was where, I mean, that's been from someone who, you know, like I say, went on tour did a tour of Core Stability to I mean, I know we've done a podcast on what we don't know, and that was it. I mean, at the time we were doing our best for people, but we were just creating this unofficial stability. We was creating this sort of inefficient stability that, as I say, was trying to stop people moving while they were moving, and we started getting sports, what we call a sports hernia, abdominal tears, lower abdominal tears, groin injuries. I mean, the amount of sort of adductor injuries we saw after we started the Core Stability. And I can remember we went on a running course, a run biomechanics course, and the instructor there said, right, I mean, their sort of logic was great. They sort of explained training needs to be like the function you're trying to improve, and it needs to smell like it and be like it. I was thinking, okay, cool. Then he said, I'm going to show you some exercises. And I said, great, I'm really looking forward to this because I'm going to learn how to now transfer the knowledge you've said. And then he took this sort of wobbly board out and he said, right, everyone's down on the wobbly board. And then he basically said, pretty much just do all you normally do on this wobbly board and it's going to really help their running. And I sort of put my hand up and said, you've just used half a day trying to explain to me we need to replicate what we do running. I've never run on one of these things before.
I'd say, unless you're running on bouncy castles, that probably isn't exactly...
It was great for bouncy castles.
Really good. I mean, you must be a hit at the parties.
This, yeah. Replicating environments, they're all the rages. Or not the rages, as it seems, just to, here's my tool.
Yeah.
This is how we do the same thing, repackage it and sell it another way. Just a cynical in and out.
Yeah.
What about the arguments that, let's talk about an injury or a lower back pain, that by training core stability in the traditional sense, it improves people's back pain?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I think the problem with I'm not trying to prove anything to anyone. Where perhaps the argument comes in there is this pretty good statistical data that proves core stability training eases pain in the back. The problem with it is we've talked about in our disc pathology podcasts that.
Could be anything. Yeah. You could be doing anything.
I mean, you just need to train.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest. Yeah, I mean, it's another podcast and it's for another time. But rest is the worst thing you can do for any kind of injury. I mean, yeah. Any kind of injury, just having total rest is the absolute last thing you want to do. I'm not saying they should carry on running marathons, but it's the last thing they want to do. So in that respect, I mean, we can see pretty much any kind of movement through tissue that's really stiff and tight and hard improves the condition and helps pain relief. So any kind of exercise, I'm going for a walk with back pain. I mean, the amount of people have come into clinic and, you can't walk, they can't do anything else. So you know what? Let's just go for a walk. You go out and have a walk with them and actually they get back and they say, I feel great. Yeah. We just needed to get you moving. So I don't know. I agree.
No, that is... Well, I would agree with it. You're doing something more than what you were doing the week before, aren't you?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
So if you're trained to do core stability exercises, then arguably you're just trained to do any more exercise than you were doing the week before, which is going to have an effect on your central nervous system. It's going to have an effect on the chemicals in your body, the imbalances, etc. It's going to have an effect, and you feel like you're doing something positive, therefore. Yeah.
Is it a case of where the athlete's at? Well, athlete person, because that core stability exercise to little old Doris, who's not done anything for 20 years, is now strength exercise. So actually,
it stimulates a reaction.
It stimulates
it?
A reaction because
that's
her,
exactly it.
Because to her, it's overload.
Yeah.
But John, who's an athlete, who has a lot more physical demand, a lot more stuff going on in his body, a lot more requirements for it, does that...
That's not...
That simple exercise with low load, low everything, how can that transfer to his body moving at X amount of miles an hour?
No, I completely agree with that.
In pain, you don't tend to do movement because you tend to be frightened of movement. So any kind of static exercise that stabilizes not moving makes a weak area, and you're hurting because of a weak area, of some kind of weak, some affliction. So that strength training there just stabilizes that area. My biggest worry is when they start moving again, you make the problem worse, and it's where the potentially the reoccurrences come from, is from core stability training in rehabilitation on the way back, is you're potentially just creating more problems than you're trying to solve.
Just to play devil's advocate a little bit.
Go for it, mate.
What happens if you can start that? You start the core stability exercises and then you work your way through to function. So you start with Joe Bloggs, who likes a bit of training. So his core exercises would be beneficial to start with to get him moving. But you have to train him all the way through. Do you just think it's totally not where we should start? Or do you think that you could use it as a platform to bounce off to something else?
I think if we agree that going for a walk with them is just as beneficial as laying down.
I think it's more beneficial. I'm just
interested. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then I think I'd probably like to start with that because... And actually this links into another wonderful point in terms of sport and elite athletes and the amount of time they waste on core stability. So many athletes, wives, husbands, jobs, kids, Ironman, bike, training, and they're squeezing in 4 hours core stability a week. I mean, you're just wasting your time. You're not even wasting your time. What you're doing is you're working against your performance, especially running.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst thing any runner could do in the world is try to stabilize their spine statically. It's just banging the head against a brick wall. It really, really is. And in that respect, I'm a therapist, I need results, I haven't got a lot of time in my clinic, and I need to get people moving and going again. If I've already got them on the road to function, with walking or moving or doing something, and it's just going to have as much of a result as laying down.
Then you're going to take
stable,
that.
Statically stable. Then of course I'm going to take that. Yeah.
It's part of the problem where the testing comes from. So it's always tested lying down because that's the normal environment of the therapist. So he's down on my couch. So I'm testing, is his core working whilst he's lying down? Whereas, how many people test it standing up? Like, is it tested? Is it? Because we know that you stand up and you're fighting gravity. There's more muscles working when we're standing up than we're lying down. So how do we know if it is or isn't working when we're stood up? I think I'm just trying to open up like that functional question of, is that treatment method only coming on because of how it's been tested in the first place?
Proving ourselves.
I'm just going around the houses.
But I agree with you, buddy.
Because that whole, and then the science of it, like all the studies on core stability, like the traditional quote that always sticks out in my mind is, people with an incidence of lower back pain, it was found that their core fired at 0.0.
Multifidus fires at a slower rate,
and it's like 0.0 something of a second
slower
in the person with lower back pain. But like I say,
is that
chicken and egg?
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah, of course, that's chicken and egg.
It's a chicken and egg scenario. Yeah. So it's like, why is that? The cause of their back pain, the fact that multifidus is weak, or is that just
a symptom
of it?
So I think we agree as a whole that lying down doing core exercises isn't exactly the best thing. So what do we do that would improve that?
I think it's a great example of incontinence. It's a great example from a baby to an adult to see the musculature. I mean, if that's what we're talking about, core stability, we're talking about, I mean, that's what we haven't really talked about, is what what muscle groups we're talking about. Yeah. We're talking about multifidus, levator ani, abdominals, internal, external obliques.
Diaphragm to a certain extent.
Diaphragm to a certain extent, multifidus, and even down to the sort of deeper interspinal muscles, interspinales, yeah, intertransversari, rotators, etc. Then we're talking about how those this unit works together with each other. I think when we look at one of the biggest jobs of the bottom side of the box, the pelvic floor, is to control incontinence or control that. When we get the biggest development is when we learn to walk.
Yeah.
You know, babies don't get potty trained. Babies learn to walk. And because learning to walk, they get strong enough to be able to develop control
pelvic floor, absolutely.
Their pelvic floor. Now, I don't want to just say that's transferable and just throw a wild stem and say that's transferable to all adults and just need to walk and everything else. But internal rotation of the femur loads the levator ani, and levator ani has one of the biggest influences on the underside of the box.
Yeah.
I think, we're talking about adults. Us as adults there and having the lower back pain, what is our circle of life? What's a kid doing? Like, the kids are going through, so they're up and moving. Like, a kid is always on the go. Like, I know now because I've got my little three-year-old. And she's all over the show. She's into everything, running everywhere, doing everything.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, the nature of our life is... becomes more and more sedentary. And the moment everyone's going, oh yeah, well, that causes tightness. Yeah, it does. We know it causes tightness sitting down, but it also causes weakness.
Yeah, tightness doesn't equal strength, does it?
No, it doesn't. Tight. Yeah.
But we're also not using our muscles the way we used to do it.
Yeah.
Like, the strength in, like, we went to a fair the other day, and my friend's kids were there, and they're probably, 6 and 7, 6 and 9 even, and they're playing on the playground, and Sophia's hanging and swinging on stuff, and they're like, oh wow, we can't do that. I'm like, that's at 6 and 9. They've lost upper body strength. And I'm going slightly off topic here, but just that nature of we're losing all these fundamental skills because of, by nature, our life goes off in a...
Yeah, the answer is core stability in a lot of cases, unfortunately. Yeah. And it's sort of the problem is it's a very sensible argument to say, make sure the trunk of the tree is strong so that the branches have a stable base to pull from. It's one of my classic seminar quotes from core stability, is that you can't have strong branches going out the tree without
a good base,
without the trunk of the tree being stable. So everyone sort of thinks, well, that's just a logical, good argument. Why don't we just use that? And the thing is that's still not wrong.
No, it's the right argument.
Having a strong core is essential. What your question was, Gemma, was, okay, so what do we do? And what you're saying, Giles, is we move.
Yeah.
You know, we use our bodies and we develop our bodies. And where the core will have the greatest load and the greatest amount of work is when the extremities need to do something.
Yeah.
And when the foot moves at the same time as the arm moves in a tennis swing or a serve or a whatever, I don't know, golf shot or a kicking a football, whatever, the demand on the core is incredible. That for me is how my core needs to work. My core needs to control my right foot moving, my left foot moving, my right arm, my left arm, but it also needs to control them at the same time so that my left leg can do something at the same time as my right hand, and so on and so on and so on. And it's the job of the core to transfer energy from those areas, absorb the energy, transfer it and use it on. It's not to dissipate, it's not to hold it still, it's not to lock it in, it's to transfer that good energy. The golf swing is a classic example of the feet driving the knees, which drive the hips, which drive the trunk, which drive the golf club. If my core just locks down and holds everything together and there isn't rotation, there isn't movement available, none of that torque gets transferred and injuries occur other places. Yeah.
So it's an energy torque watt transferer that transfers energy from one place to another place. That's the job of the core, but you don't get energy through without movement. You just stop when you steal. So when energy travels up to something that's not moving, it stops.
So you need to be able to load through range, through tissue, through movement, in order for you to, like you said, transfer that energy.
Exactly.
Going back, I've never heard that tree example before of the core. But I'm just going back to my rubbish, very, very long time ago, biology of the tree. And you're saying the core, the trunk, is the most important. But then if we go back to the feet and the arms, if we're onto the feet and the arms, well, that's called the roots and the branches of the tree. Well, actually, they feed the trunk, from my limited biology, because obviously the roots are things that pick all the vitamins and minerals.
Yeah.
So they then feed the tree.
Yeah.
Feed the tree from the ground up, and then all the leaves and everything absorbing the light. That's the photosynthesis, and they feed the tree from the top down. So the branches of the arms and the roots of the feet. And there's the core in the middle.
We can still use the tree analogy, but what we've got to do is realise that a tree is not on its back. We've got to use our feet as the roots and our hands as the leaves for photosynthesis.
Yeah.
Like this.
We'll have a stronger core.
And then I have a stronger core.
Exactly, because the feet tend to be on the floor, don't they?
I've heard that, yeah. I mean, they do tend to be on the floor.
So what are we going to do? So now I'm going to just go completely against myself now and just be a sort of, play devil's advocate a little bit and say, okay, right, but then I test core stability, then all elite athletes should have a fantastically strong core because they go out and train and do everything every day. So because they're in the gym 5-6 times a week, because they're running 4-5 times a week, because they're swimming, doing all these things, when I test their core, they should be... their core should be mega, mega strong, and it's not.
But how are you testing their
core? Great answer. That's what I wanted you to say. Tell me. Talk, Gemma.
Well, it depends on how they're then testing the core, because who says when the core is strong and when the core is weak? It doesn't make any sense.
So
it's got to be specific for the person's job, the person's role in their sport. So... I don't know, a gymnast's core is going to be different to a footballer's, to a horse rider's, to, I don't know, Olympic weightlifters, to a golfer's. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can't say, okay, right, you overhead squat 200 kilos amazingly, or you've got a great golf swing. You can't say, but can you lie on your back and lift a leg up without your back coming off the bed? This doesn't make any sense.
Agreed.
It's like asking me, as a physio, to test my intelligence by giving me a ridiculous test that has no relevance to my...
It was Einstein that said, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree,
the
fish will spend the rest of its life thinking it's an idiot.
Exactly.
What test are you using? I would imagine... if you tested this person in their sport at what they do, their core would be incredibly good. But yes, laying down in a position they never do and measuring something that's totally irrelevant to what they do will always give a bad reading because they haven't trained it. The same as my example with speaking Danish. If I've spoken French for a week, my Danish is terrible.
And the motor pathways aren't going to be the same. It's like learning a new skill for the first time, any skill. It could be anything. It could be, I don't know, it could be any new skill that you learn, whether it be something small or chucking a ball through a hoop. You do it enough times, you get better at it, but it doesn't mean to say that if you do it the first time, that you're always going to be bad at it.
No, exactly.
Is that, like say, these tests that we do as well, not only are they specific to that sport, but also where is the... specificity from a point of this test traditionally works off that recruitment theory of can they use their brain to recruit that muscle? But when I have a golf club in my hand, the last thing I'm thinking about is, am I recruiting
my left glute
when there's more than one muscle that needs to be recruited in a sequence that we have no possible way of being able to comprehend how to control and sequence all of those muscles to fire at the right time, in the right sequence, to be able to do that task. I would not be able to hit the golf. I wouldn't even lift the golf club off the floor because I wouldn't know where to start.
Absolutely, mate.
So why is my test a conscious test when my sport is a subconscious? Yeah. Here's my ball, here's my stick, club. Sorry, not a golfer.
And away we go.
And away we go.
I think, I mean, of course, my athletes are a classic example. They're always asking me, Phil, yeah, but, you know, we read in every wheel we should be doing core stability and, you know, it's injury prevention and we need to do it. And I mean, I hand on heart, never give a static lying exercise to anyone in any under any circumstance because there's not enough hours in the day for it. And they're often asked by my athletes, well, Phil, why don't we do it? Or should I do it? And a lot of them, because they're so professional and the due diligence, they say, you know, I've got 10 minutes. What if I just woke up in the morning and did 10 minutes core? Because I feel like it helps me. And to be honest with you there, in that respect, they're doing so much dynamic moves, they're not going to hurt themselves. Like, don't, you know, there's no reason for me to sort of jump up and down and say, well, don't do it. I'm not going to jump my bandwagon. If that's what you want to do, you know, go for it. But you're not going to get the huge benefit from it. And the great example I'll give is we'll do a 6-minute conditioning circuit. There's a lot of sort of 6-minute conditioning circuits for the guys. And in that conditioning circuit, a lot of the time, the demand we ask from the system, the work, the effort demand on the system there, you could do core for, if you just want to just measure pure how much you need to work through the midsection, how much energy you need to transfer through the midsection, you could do core for 3 days in a row and you wouldn't get anywhere near that 6 minutes because of the demand. Once that core has to, as you say, subconsciously, neurologically control, understand, transfer, move, multiple directional, multiple movements, multiple times, multiple sequences, multiple speeds. I mean, it's just a Christmas tree effect where everything just lights up and everything has to work and go, and that stimuli of backwards and forwards of controlling everything is far greater in that one set of 12 than you could do over 30 minutes of holding a static position on a ball or moving around or anything else. So that's why I've gone a long way away from it. I think, Gemma, from your standpoint, I mean, core stability seems to unfortunately have sort of gone to been the sort of go-to thing, hasn't it, for physiotherapy. I mean, I've seen loads of examples of people come here with problems and say, well, what have you been given from your physio? And they sort of, well, load of core stability exercise and it's sort of ankle pain or it's knee pain. It's sort of like that's become the fix to fix everything. What's your experience of that?
And I've absolutely been guilty of it as well. Prior to developing my knowledge on it, I've definitely been guilty of doing it. But I think it's because that is almost the tradition of what we do. That's what we do because that has worked in the past, and therefore people continue to do it.
Yeah.
So because people have seen some successes with it, and the, like we've talked about in the past, are the successes just coincidental? More than likely, we're getting someone moving, and therefore you have some success in it. But we get almost complacent in the sense of us continuing to do the same things over and over again, whereas if you just made more sense, open things out a little bit more in a, I hate to say the word, but in a more functional capacity, so look at Olympic lifter with all their movements and work on those to specifically get the motor pathways, the neural pathways, and that will strengthen things. But that isn't the way it works for everyone and every therapist, unfortunately.
To ask a kind of devil's, is it devil's advocate question?
Not like me.
So what happens when obviously the core stability seems to be a go-to. So what's the next stage for if it doesn't work?
That's a good question.
Like where do people go?
But I think the difficulty is that in our roles, you're seeing a completely different client set to what I would see on a day-to-day basis. So seeing the elite athletes, as we've already said, and seeing the people that train two or three times a day, it's that isn't going to help them. So you're not even going to begin with that. Whereas when we see people that have not the capacity to do anywhere near what we really want them to do, that will load stuff, starting somewhere is arguably better than starting nowhere. And we've already said that walking's going to be the next, it would be the, it's going to get more result than lying down and doing exercises. Fine, we've already said that. But I don't think
well,
I can answer.
That is where you go, isn't it?
Yeah, you can. That's what I mean. You continue to develop. Nothing works in isolation. Nothing works. One set of exercises to. I can't answer the question because one set of exercises for anything isn't going to work. That just doesn't make any sense. So, it's so multifaceted as to why people get a pain and problem that if core stability exercises don't help. So, and I'm not saying that I use core stability exercises regularly, like I've just said, but if that doesn't work, you move on. You don't. It's not like the physio's only know core stability exercises, because that would be a ridiculous thing to say.
Yeah. I think I'm possibly being unfair because I know you've got so many tools to offer. Yeah. But how was your kind of experience of the physios where that is their go-to, and when it doesn't work, how many of them are then stuck? Because that's... Is it a belief? Is it something that's been proven in the testing? I don't know. I'm just asking these questions because I'm just interested to, because obviously I get to see people when they've kind of been given these things and it's not worked. But okay. I'm just wondering, like, have they gone back to that person? Have they given them another chance? Those physios, have they got one?
You can't tarnish all physios.
No, my brother's a physio. I'm just interested with that. They started at the core. Why did they?
Yeah. Where did they go?
Is there a protocol? Does the protocol stop? No,
I wouldn't say there's like a protocol that you'd follow. I mean, there's, if you think about, one of the things that physios will use is Pilates. So they'll use Pilates as a base, and then there's various levels of exercise that you go through. But if you think about the reason why we use them, we're probably using it for back pain. Now, as we've already talked about, 90% of people with back pain are going to get better on their own anyway. So it's hard to say that, oh, what if that doesn't work? Because chances are we've already said it in the past, that with our previous podcast, that they're going to get better anyway. So I can't answer your question, I don't think.
No, that's cool.
So I've got a question, putting you guys a little bit on the spot.
Good.
To wrap it up with.
Yeah.
Was core stability just a bit of a fad? And is it time to move on?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fitness industry though, isn't it? It seems to have these...
Wow, yeah. But I mean, it's physiotherapy more than fitness industry, I think.
Oh, you were teaching core stability back in 2000. Yeah. When I got into the fitness industry, we were both stood on stability balls because we thought it looked cool. So like it was Pilates.
What was your squat?
Back then.
Stability ball, mate. What was your weight?
Stability ball.
I can't remember mine, but I'm just going to say 5 kilos more than what you say.
Twice body weight.
Yeah. Good. We need more coffee. So we're going to have some coffee, and then we're going to come back next week with our next podcast, which is going to be injury psychology.
which is a very interesting topic for us. We hope you've enjoyed it. As always, any questions, please contact us directly on our Facebook page, A Shot in the Dark, or directly here on the comment section, and we'll try and get your questions in next time. Thank you.